Hello, chat. Acknowledge us. We are insecure. Hello.
Hello, everyone.
Welcome to the post-CP. God. This is what happens when you take 2 days off for the weekend. You forget things.
Post-CP? Oh, no.
Not welcome to the post-CP stream. Welcome to slightly something else. Where I'm joined by Marty Sleaver.
Hello, everybody.
I'm Yahtzee Croucher, by the way. It says under my face, but it bears repeating. And what are we talking about this week, Marty?
We're talking about the never-ending debate about video game difficulty, but more through the lens of do we think that game critics need to be good at video games in order to be good critics?
Oh boy, there's a lot of unpacking that needs to be done there, isn't there?
There is. I think this will also be like a little bit of a therapy session for us. So I'm glad we got the Escapist 2 expert gamers here.
Then I don't know how ironically you meant to say that.
Yes.
But, I've caught shit many times over the years
for
apparently not being good at games when I criticize them.
I was being ironic because I admittedly I'm pretty bad at a lot of games. However, I feel strongly that skill does not equal good criticism and vice versa.
Quite. And people only really have my streams to go off. And when I'm on stream, I play anything up to about 60% worse than I play when I don't feel the pressure of performing to an audience.
Yeah, that's another thing is so much of our jobs are playing and speaking extemporaneously on a topic. Whether it's like you were just mentioning in post-CP last week about Hi-Fi Rush, which is a game that very much so requires your attention in order to maintain a beat. That is a game that's very hard to play kind of mindlessly, you know, whereas like the Power Wash Simulator is something that we did that whole 2 hour stream of is something that you can very much play mindlessly.
It's a good thing you started on Hi-Fi Rush, because that's one of the many facets of this topic I wanted to bring up. Because we both like Hi-Fi Rush. Hi-Fi Rush has gotten pretty rave reviews, but there's a lot of people in comments I see who say they just bounce off it. And it's usually because they just don't have rhythm, which is something some people have. They just don't get along with rhythm games because they just can't keep a beat. Some people can't. It's a thing. Yeah. And how do you think people like you and I would feel if we saw a review in a major medium of Hi-Fi Rush written by someone with no rhythm who didn't like the game?
It would be very much a, why did this person waste their time doing this? This seems like a strange choice of a person to pair with this specific game.
You got your toffee time early this week because he's going out with the rest of the family for a walk.
Oh my God, early toffee time. Bonus toffee time. I mean, that's one of the strange things about games in general, even like compared to, you know, other similar mediums like literature or film or television or music or even sports. The vast array of genres means that it is quite literally impossible for anyone to be a master of all of them.
Quite. Like there's also the fact that the only way to be good at a game is to play it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And the nature of a jobbing criticism is that you have to move on to a new game every week. You just simply don't have the time to get good.
No, that's absolutely. And the games we tend to play and speak about in the audience are A, games that we have some sort of interest in, and B, games that we think our audience has an interest in. And so, you know, there's just certain genres you're just probably not going to hear the two of us talk about. We're not going to be talking about hardcore racing sims or, you know, 4X games or competitive shooters or... MMOs, just because it's like those things are like little part-time jobs that we just absolutely don't have the time to fully understand.
Yeah, I really don't get along with real-time strategy, amongst other things.
Mm-hmm.
I just find it hard to divide my attention.
Yeah.
Games where I'm one person and I've only got that one person to worry about. But when you've got like six different units and they're all fighting different parts of the battlefield, I find it very easy to get overwhelmed very quickly.
There's a certain point when the camera zooms out too much, and I'm like, you've zoomed out too much. You've lost me. You need to zoom in a little bit.
So I wouldn't pretend to review an RTS. I admit I have done in the past, but usually just for the gag of someone like me trying to play an RTS.
Yeah.
Or because it was the releases were that dead.
Yeah, yeah. But it's also that games, you know, in a way that those other mediums I mentioned don't, games push back at you. Mm. You, like, unless you are impatient, anyone can finish a movie or a TV show. Mm. As long as you have, you know, basic reading comprehension or are willing to put the time in to look things up, you can finish books. Like, even really obtuse books like Gravity's Rainbow or Ulysses. Like, if you really take your time, you can push through it. Whereas there's just certain games, maybe there's some people who just, you know, can't get past Margit in Elden Ring.
And it's one of the many wonderful, nuanced ways video interactive narrative really changes the game when it comes to art history and criticism. Counterpoint, though, that motherfucker who reviewed Cuphead and couldn't figure out how to dash in the tutorial.
This is a problem. You are spreading misinformation. You said that motherfucker who reviewed Cuphead, he didn't review it. It was at a trade show, captured footage, and wrote of the first 25 minutes or whatever, and wrote a piece about how he was bad at the game and didn't understand what the game wanted from him. And admittedly, Dean Takahashi, not a game journalist, is a tech journalist who happened to be at a show where there was a version of that game to play, and so wrote it up for the site.
Okay. Well, let's take a different example. Me playing Sonic Frontiers.
Yes.
Because I like to think I had a complicated opinion on that game. I think it had some positive qualities, but ultimately I went away with a broadly negative feeling for it. I think there were a lot of tonal issues with it. The gameplay felt a little detached from the environment. And there's a lot of mini-game shit that I thought was very, very tiresome. And ultimately I really hated the boss fights. And I expressed that feeling throughout the course of that review. But when I looked at the response, what I found very, very annoying is that everyone sort of zeroed in, the Sonic fans particularly, or fans of that game, zeroed in on my complaints about the boss fights and how they were irritating. And all of them said, no, you could just parry them. Parry, parry, parry. Yata doesn't know how to parry. He shouldn't be reviewing this game. He's obviously can't understand basic things. And I found this infuriating, because this was just one thing I was ripping on the game for. And joke on joke, I fucking knew how to parry. I was parrying all the time in that game. It's just, when you have to write when you have to write a 5-minute review, some things you sort of amend for the sake of flow and for the sake of humor. So I didn't I didn't like mention the parry mechanic. And what I was getting from the feedback is that the whole review was just dismissed because people were just saying he never figured out how to parry.
There's a subset of folks online who don't want criticism; they want validation. If you would have said the exact same thing, but overall your thesis was I loved the game, those fans would have never said a thing because they want their opinions validated. They don't want a deconstruction of the thing that they've, you know, ended up having become the totem of their identity. And that's what I see so often. I see that before games come out. I see, even in our Discord or in the comments, I see when we announce whatever the next game you're going to play is. So you're playing Dead Space Remake this week. I see people say, I'm fucking stoked for Yahtzee to tear that game apart. And I'm like, why are we going in with like an expectation that a critic is going to like tear this thing apart? Why don't we go in open-minded and then see what you think of it? So it seems like, you know, we also talk about games that get the sort of the strange zeitgeist dogpiling before they come out. Forspoken felt like one of those. We talked at length about Saints Row last year, felt like one of those.
Those were both really bad games, though.
Saints Row was not really bad. We both agreed the game was just fine, and that's almost what made it the most forgettable, right?
Well, I guess I was attached to the previous games. And added an extra layer against the Saints Row.
You have you're one of the people, honestly, one of the people I think has the most personal attachment to earlier games in that series, like the way you speak of you know, Saints Row 2 or 3 and 4 is kind of different than I think most critics speak to. So I feel like them going back to the well for that franchise is really going to you know, strike a nerve with you.
Well, I guess that's kind of relevant because, well, what we're talking about here is, do critics have a expectation to know what they're talking about when they review a game, which I would say, I would argue, yes.
Yes, I would agree with that.
And often with a game like something like Dark Souls, it can take, you have to be skilled in the game to know what you're talking about, because that's the whole core of the game. I look back on shame of my original review of Demon's Souls before I really understood the whole From Software experience. And I just complained that it was too hard and whined a lot.
Yeah.
But, and then after the fact, I got into Dark Souls and sort of understood the appeal. And I would never have been able to grasp the understanding of the appeal within the first week that Dark Souls came out.
Yeah. Yeah, there was, I mean, it's not like you were an odd man out with Demon's Souls. I think the industry at large, Demon's Souls was such a strange and new thing.
Well, I do.
Knee-jerk reaction to it by most people was, what the fuck is this? Why is this so opaque and difficult?
I do maintain that there's a reason why Dark Souls was when the series really took off.
It's better. It's better in every way.
Yeah, Demon's Souls had its stumbles.
Yeah. Yeah, Dark Souls definitely feels like one of the, we talk about that a lot, like Uncharted 1 to Uncharted 2 or Assassin's Creed 2 to Assassin's Creed 1, where it feels like it was built, it took the framework of an original game and sort of made it better in every way, shape, and form.
Ooh, Frost and Nick are in the chat, that's relevant, because Frost just had a video go out on Early Access on the subject of playing games wrong.
Yes.
Which he referenced Nick's recent love affair with Death Stranding, which he acquired from playing Death Stranding on the easiest difficulty.
Yep.
Which has earned him a bit of ire from the community, saying that he's playing Death Stranding wrong, and therefore his opinion cannot be considered.
You know what? He got a retweet from Kojima himself, so fuck them fans. That's
well, he was just sucking his dick.
Oh, well done, Nick. I'm proud of you.
I think there's also the layer of things where not so much playing the game wrong, but not playing the game as intended. I think it's safe to say that most games aren't intended to be played on the easiest difficulty. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, isn't that what normal is? in theory, normal. Normal would be that,
Come and join the rest of us actual normal people to playing normal difficulty, you fucking freaks.
Yeah, counterpoint. If a game is frustrating me, I'm too old to be bashing my head against the wall. Do you sort of agree that once sort of art goes out into the world, it belongs to the people, no longer belongs to the artist? So
well,
does intent
sure,
really matter?
I'm sure a transgender Harry Potter fan would tell you that one has to separate art from artist.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's a little different, though. Death of the author. I'm not talking about death of the author. I'm more talking about
violent death of the author, hopefully.
But I'm more talking about, people say Smash Bros. Casey is a hardcore Smash Brothers player and insists the game should be played without items, without weapons, on boring ass stages.
Is that intentional? Is that the intended experience, though? I'd say no.
What's intended, though? If you have the options, doesn't intent... If the options are there to toggle on and off, if the options are there to, you know, set the game to easy... Like, I would say there's clear intent in Souls games, in FromSoft games, because they don't have difficulty
sliders. There you go.
Whereas if a game has... You know, The Last of Us has everything from, story mode to Grounded, which has permadeath, I believe. Is there intention there, or is every difficulty hold the same weight?
Well, let's not get confused with finding your own entertainment with a game, like Nick did with Death Stranding, and being able to criticize it as a critic. So from a critical perspective, I think there's validity in assessing what the author was trying to achieve.
Sure.
Rather than whether or not the critic themselves is good at the game.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, I would agree with that, but I also think a casual person entering a realm like that, their opinion to me can be just as interesting. You know, I think at a certain point you can almost become too good at a game and too lost in the sauce to where your criticism almost becomes hard to parse. If you have the people you see sometimes in our Sea of Thieves streams, people who have like 5,000 hours in that game. And it's like, at a certain point, you are no longer speaking the same language as people who are just asking, is this game any good? Should I try this game out?
Well, I guess ultimately this is my argument, because the critic's role is to provide sort of the everyman experience.
Yes.
And it's possible for someone who plays a game to be a little bit too in.
Yeah.
Like, especially if you've like played like a very long-running, very fan-centered franchise, and then you play a new installment that's like... turned its back on the fans to appeal to a broad demographic. I think that person probably is a little bit too in to criticize that game fairly.
Yeah, but like at a certain point, I don't know, the idea of like fair and bias and stuff, that becomes kind of like a murky waters. As long as I know what the authorial intent of whoever's writing this piece is, then I'm really interested in that. So like Nick, right from the get-go, sort of his whole thing in the game wasn't Death Stranding is too hard. Anyone who plays Death Stranding on hard is cheating themselves. His whole thing was like, for me personally, in order to get enjoyment out of this thing, I needed to turn it down to easy so that I didn't have to engage with the, you know, systems and mechanics that I found to be tedious and off-putting.
Again, that may ultimately be the final argument here. The critic can only speak for themselves.
Yeah.
And it's on the audience to get a range of opinions, maybe from some critics who are established to like that sort of thing, and some critics who are entirely new to that sort of thing. The idea of consuming criticism and review is you're supposed to find critics that you generally agree with and see how they feel about new games, because no one can represent absolutely everyone.
But at the same time, I do find... So I just finished Resident Evil 4. I did, and let me tell you what a game. The sure island stuff is kind of wonky. Island stuff gets kind of wonky. First two thirds, perfect.
You played it before, right?
I have played it before. I haven't played it since in probably 15 years, though.
I wonder how people who've gotten used to, because it was the first game to do that over the shoulder, one third positioning on screen character action gameplay. And I think there's been a lot of sort of tweaking and proof of life improvements on that whole thing since then.
There has, but at the same time, I've been watching a bunch of video game essays on it, like YouTube essays on it after finishing it, because that's what I do, I finish games. And I think it was Noah Caldwell-Gervais, an entire video about the Resident Evil franchise.
Oh my god, guy can blab on about shit.
Oh my god, he makes. Can you make a 7.5-hour video on the Resident Evil series? Because I'm halfway through his.
I wouldn't want to. I think you'd need some kind of mental illness.
It's incredible. I love it. But anyways, he talks about how Resident Evil 4 and Half-Life, which is another game, you know, we're currently covering at The Escapist with Casey playing through for the first time, both felt like games. He compared them to, in Greek mythology, how Athena was born from Zeus's body fully formed. How these two games felt like they entered the world and had a new genre fully formed, which I find like fascinating, because it is true that like while things were built upon them, that didn't feel like this was like a dry run at something. It felt like one of those games that should have been like the iteration of several games before it, but wasn't. It was just a first that was sort of born perfect and a mold for things going forward, which is interesting, because he also, in that video, he says he's terrible at games and was bad at Resident Evil 4.
I'm not like you. Sorry.
What song is that?
It's the song that was the theme to Stephanie Sterling's series for the longest time.
Gotcha.
Sorry, I completely zoned out while you were talking there.
I'm sorry.
It's not on you. I was distracted by other things.
No, it's your time. It's your time to talk.
Oh,
You get the attention now. Spotlight on Yahtzee.
Okay.
What kind of snarks do you got for us?
Well, I guess I wanted to ask you your honest opinion on, do you think, as someone who is a huge fan of Resident Evil 4, my review of the remake will be at all tainted?
I mean, but are we? Isn't every review filled with that person's sort of bias and history and?
I guess,
and we're like, but, we carry the baggage of life with us. We carry the baggage of the things we like and the things we don't.
Well, that's
like,
my point. Is would it be more valid to see a review without baggage?
But there are going to be plenty of reviews without baggage.
Would that be a more useful viewpoint in the ultimate analysis of that game?
For me, I am going to be thrilled to read and watch reviews of people who have this game in their DNA, like you. So for both Resident Evil 4 and for
Silent Hill 2.
Silent Hill 2. but I will also be thrilled, Casey's never played Resident Evil 4. So if Casey were to play the Resident Evil 4 remake, I'd be thrilled to see what he has to say about it. Like, what is it like coming to this new experience? Because there are going to be probably millions of people who play Resident Evil 4 and haven't played the original. There's probably literally millions of people who play the Dead Space remake who didn't play the original Dead Space.
You know what I think is going to happen? Lots of people didn't play the original Resident Evil 4 are going to play Resident Evil 4 remake and go, yeah, it's all right. Because what they're doing, Capcom are doing here, is that they're taking something that was originally this explosive like sea change in video game design and just sort of making it homogenous with the rest of their shit they're putting out right now. It's just another RE2 make or another RE3 make. That wallpaper on a new skeleton.
But the Resident Evil 2 remake is fucking great, though. Like, if it's another Resident Evil 2 remake, I think
RE2 make was justified because the original Resident Evil 2 was a PlayStation 1 fixed camera survival horror game and looks really lame now.
Yeah, you're a chunky tank man.
Yeah, but now they're just... Now it's just Resident Evil 2, Resident Evil 3, and then Resident Evil 4 was just this so far and away... this entirely new entity from those things on the PS1. In this case, with this new remake series, it's just RE2, RE3, RE4, and they're all the same.
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen. People are just going to go, eh, it's all right.
Yeah, I think the big thing is going to be, we need to see how they're going to handle mostly the back half of that game when it gets really strange, because they haven't showed that at all. They've shown spooky villages, and they've shown... caverns.
It's pretty strange from the start. Like chainsaw dudes with bags on their
head. Yeah, I guess chainsaw dudes. Hey, that dog. It's that dog.
Yeah. Dudes' heads explode and a fucking calamari platter comes out.
It's absolutely delicious. Yeah. It is a weird game. I'm excited to see more folks be able to check it out, though. I also think there's been a general like. If you zoom the camera out, there's been a general sort of aggression against journalists in general over the past decade.
Do you think?
Just a little bit. Some of that spawning from Gamergate, some of that spawning from the presidency we had in the back half of the decade. But,
well, let's not forget that when Gamergate started, I mean, fair point, it became something very horrible.
Sure.
But initially, there were some people like the late Total Biscuit and like myself, who was like took a similar view that the Gamergate was a consumer revolt against a media that was too in bed with publishers, which I still think is a perfectly valid thing to complain about. It became, as I say, Gamergate became something else, but that was my initial interpretation of it.
I think the writing was on the wall right from the beginning where that was going to go.
Okay. Well, that wasn't... Well, as I say, we've all got our own subjective experiences. That's the whole point, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, but it's not, like, I worked at IGN for several years, and so I know that, like, every time a review goes up, it is just... It's just hate on the outlet, hate on the person. Like, that is one of those things. Like, the huge difference between the comment section and the community at the Escapist Grid IGN is in comparison, smaller, more intimate community here is generally incredibly positive and like really sweet. And the people we have in Discord, and the people who show up to live streams, and the people who play on community game nights are like, they have like a level of empathy. Whereas the people in the comments of any bigger site, there's like an anonymity and a want to just burn the windmill down and kill what they foresee as a Frankenstein.
Yeah, we've
Frankenstein
got monster. The Escapist has a nice human face.
We do. Yeah.
Contrast to the. The corporate games media that just wants 8.9s and 9s and 9.2s to...
But they don't want that. See, that is the problem. Like, you are speaking from the point of ignorance that millions of people have. And that is, like, genuinely damaging to, like, the good criticism and good journalism that's happening at these places. And it sucks.
Well, I know the publishers want the numbers.
Well, publishers want the numbers, but as someone who worked, like, there's still that, there's still people who say, well, it's clearly people get paid for good reviews. And do you think, like, a secret can't be held between three people?
No,
do you think that there's this global conspiracy where EA and Ubisoft and Activision and Nintendo and Microsoft, multinational companies, are handing money to who? The editor-in-chief, the publisher, the reviews editor, the writers? Like, how do you think this works? I saw someone go on a whole thread of, like, do you think there's, like, W-2s and, like, W-9s involved in this? Like, how does this work?
Well, obviously, no one's just, like, handing out brown envelopes, but, you know, publishers do influence on in subtler ways, like the problems we've had with Sony not giving us review copies because we don't suck their dick. And there's also like,
how is influence. That? That's not an inf. That's just access. That's not influence.
Yeah, but access can be financially important to a media output. I mean, we might make more money if we were able to get reviews out at the exact time of release.
Sure. Have we ever changed in order to cater to publishers? I mean, as in, like, Sony. We didn't say, okay, we'll soften up the language on ZPs for Sony going forward. Correct.
Well, I haven't.
No, and I'm pretty sure Nick hasn't either. Knowing Nick, if anything, Nick probably just went on a Twitter tirade against them. But those things don't happen. Those things do not happen at the big sites. I guess I can only speak to IGN. Those do not happen there.
Well, the big sites are sort of being pushed out by the influencers these days.
And the influencers are the ones that actually get money. They get money from publishers and developers to cover their games.
They don't even hide it, do they?
No. And it's fine. As long as it's open and honest, I think that's fine. Like, I don't know, if you're doing sponsored streams, we do sponsored streams. We need to keep the lights on. That allows us to hire new people, to bring more editors on, to, you know, allow for an editor to take over something like extra punctuation so you get more series, or to make Adventures Now bigger and cooler than ever before.
Well, sooner or later, the money creeps in, I think.
I mean, the money creeps into what? You can't, that's just like, that's such a shitty, like, well, eventually they're going to come out as corrupt. That's not how it works. Like, that's the viewpoint that gets people to not trust these sites, and how we get all these thumbnails that say honest reviews. And I fucking hate the idea of honest review, because all you're doing, if you put honest review in your headline or thumbnail, is you're shitting on everyone behind you, being like, none of those guys are honest, but I have honest in my summary.
Well,
sucks.
To quote Robert Englund in Injustice 2, touched a nerve there.
wait, Freddy?
Yeah, Robert Englund voiced Scarecrow in Injustice 2.
Oh, I was so confused. I was like, Freddy Krueger? Yeah. He's been in one of those Injustice games, though, hasn't he? Or he's been in...
He was in the Mortal Kombat.
Mortal Kombat. That was it. That makes more sense. Sorry, I started ranting, and I feel like we're not talking about difficulty anymore.
Although, he wasn't voiced by Robert Englund when Freddy Krueger was in Mortal Kombat 9.
So they got him to be Scarecrow, but they couldn't get him to be Freddy?
Maybe that was the apology.
I guess so.
Anyway,
there was a really bad Freddy remake.
Well, anyway, let's get back to the point. I'm not shit at games. Sorry. Fuck you.
There's some games you're probably shit at, right? How are you at fighting games? You can't be good at fighting games.
Okay, I'm shit at a lot of those games.
Yeah.
But the fact is, you know, I like to think I represent a sort of average level of skill for video games.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of people who have trouble just sort of getting into the space of being able to respond quickly with button presses to things they see on screen. Like, watch your grandma playing a first-person shooter with a Xbox controller, and you'll see what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
I have, at the level where I could go into basically any game and at least play it on a functional level.
Mm-hmm. Has there ever been... can you think back in your 15, however many years of doing this, like, has there been a game that's been the... stood out in terms of being really hard to review, just for like being like, fuck, this is, I mean, was that Demon's Souls, I guess, like something new and something unexpected,
or like RTS is like, I tried to review Halo Wars at one point.
Yeah. And so now you're kind of just, you've done this long enough to know, like, I really don't need to be doing this.
I just feel like a fish out of water playing RTS.
Yeah. And there are games, I hear you. I hear that with MMOs, same thing with
there are games where I felt like I had a physical limitation. Like remember when Kinect was a thing?
Oh,
and
yeah.
They kept trying to bring out core games rather than just, you know, fun party games and dancing sims. They tried to bring out core gameplay stuff like Rise of Nightmares, which was like a survival horror with Kinect. And how you're supposed to play that was that you're supposed to stand up and put one foot forward to walk forward.
Yeah.
And I could only play that for like half an hour before I'd be in massive physical pain. Because I'm a tall man. I can't stand off balance for long periods without pain going all through my feet and all up my legs and all up and back. So I almost feel maybe I shouldn't have reviewed that game because I was physically unable to be immersed by it.
Yeah. No, that's understandable. And that's why, I mean, we're also seeing a rise in, you know, accessibility options in games. Whether it's, you know, alternative controls or... you know, settings to help people with either like visual or hearing impairments or again, even difficulty. Like Sony's been kind of at the forefront of that, which I...
Ah, accessibility. Yeah. That's a whole extra argument in itself, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it it is. I feel like that could be a topic for another day. But I don't know. Like to me, critics, like being good at the game is not one of the things I look for.
Well,
in critics. Like,
sorry to have to throw a whole wrench into the whole this thing right before we're supposed to go to Super Chats.
Yeah.
But what do we mean by good at the game?
I mean that's also a good point, because isn't that just a completely person to person basis?
Nobody's bad at formulating their own opinion. Nobody gets their own opinion wrong.
But people can be bad at expressing that opinion.
Yeah,
you know, people can be bad, like critics to me, a great critic, you know, unpacks mechanics and tone and intent, and they can explain how they feel and why they feel that way. And they to add context.
I do like to think that it's not so much being good at every game that makes me a good critic. It's the fact that I have played hundreds upon thousands of games and like to think I have a fairly decent insight into the way games are made and their design tropes and the fundamentals of how to make an appealing or cathartic experience.
Mm-hmm. And you have history of actually making games yourself.
That's a big part of it.
You know, writing books. And so you have a, like, you know, base understanding of story structure and of, you know, of a core level of design.
It helps giving that sort of analytical level. But I think I'd say mostly I operate on the broadest possible level, which is, am I having fun? And once you can answer that question, that's when you start going into the deep takes and figuring out what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, yeah.
So there you go. You don't have to be good at games, but you do have to be good at criticism.
There you go. But what is good at criticism? No.
All right. Let's go to Super Chats. There'll be plenty of arguments once we go to Super Chats.
No, everyone's going to be very nice and no one's going to say a mean thing or accuse any of us of taking money.
You start us off because I've lost the first view again.
I think you've lost a lot of them. Fresh Ground Tuesday, been a member for 2 months. $5 donation. Thank you so much, Tuesday. I want to be the first in the comments to say, quote, obviously not, because how else would Yahtzee have had a career this long?
Yeah. You've only seen waka, me stream. Waka. 60% skill loss, as I keep saying. You should have seen me in my Guitar Hero heyday, asshole.
Yeah, we're getting old, though. We're getting old. The reflexes are going out.
I know. I got, like, this persistent pain in my right wrist, which is probably playing expert-level Guitar Hero for many years. Didn't help.
Also, you should stop playing on mouse and keyboard and start playing with controllers.
Oh,
consoles for life. And then Beast Marsh with $2 dono just replying to that saying, damn it, you beat me to it. So apparently several people wanted to roast.
Let's all get the obvious tags in.
Alex Farenberg with a $2 dono: a good critic articulates, is sympathetic, and is insightful.
I like that word, articulate.
Articulate's really good. Insightful is really good. I think
I just like the word. I like the sound of the word. Articulate. I also like serendipitous.
Serendipitous is really good. It rolls off the tongue well.
I'm a sort of like expert at this point of saying words very fast. You know what I found is a really weirdly easy word to say fast?
What's that?
Developers.
Developers. Why do you think that is? Is that just like the way certain consonants and vowels flow into each other?
Yeah, because like each consonant obviously requires different like mouth arrangements, and for some reason, all the consonants of developers just sort of flow into each other.
Yeah, you do say it very quickly.
Developers.
Oh my gosh. Oh my God. Incredible. Tommy Salty, 10 Zwoti donation. Thank you so much. Good critics should critique, not criticize.
But what does that mean, Tommy Salty? Doesn't critique involve criticizing? I think a lot of people like make the mistake of assuming criticize has the meaning of always being negative.
Sure. Which is because that's what the word, like the word criticize has.
It's what it's come to mean.
Predominantly
language evolves.
But that's not criticism. Criticism can be
analysis, extremely positive.
Criticism is more about
analysis from the perspective of the larger cultural zeitgeist.
Yeah. Zeitgeist is a pretty good word, too.
That's a good word, too. I know. It's German. It literally translates...
it is the ghost of our times.
I know. Literally translates to time ghost.
That's very scary. I don't want to fuck with any of those time ghosts. Husky Highlander, $2 dono. Who critiques the critics? YouTubers. YouTubers critique
the critics. Oh, yeah. There's plenty of YouTubers doing that old shit.
Yeah, yeah. And then they do a lot of thumbnails where they have the people and then they point and they make a face.
Who the fuck watches reaction videos of other YouTube videos?
Millions of people.
I know. Why? I don't get it.
I don't know. That's just something I don't understand. That's just something I'm gonna chalk to. Maybe I'm just too old for this shit. I'm like Murtaugh. And,
is it like why they had to put laugh tracks on old sitcoms? Because otherwise the audience wouldn't know when to laugh.
So what happens when you take away the laugh track? Is there just awkward silence?
Have you seen those videos where they take the laugh tracks of old sitcoms?
Yeah, it feels haunted.
And it's excruciating, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, genuinely.
It doesn't work so well on sitcoms that are actually funny.
No, it really doesn't. SVS Guru with a €5 donation. I think critics should be as good at games as the average player that plays them, or at least take that skill level into account.
But what does that mean?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when 20 million people buy Elden Ring, how do we take the average of those 20 million people?
I'd say the average person who played Elden Ring probably sucked at it because it calls far higher than average skill level.
Yeah, and even when we talk about sometimes the stats behind like Steam achievements or anything like that, and even games that are relatively short and you'd think people would be able to get through like Portal still have a surprisingly small completion percentage.
I know. Something like Hogwarts Legacy is still at like 4%.
Yeah. I mean, there's also a lot of people who just don't...
The achievement for completing the game.
There's also just a lot of people who play games like an hour a night, maybe, if that, or a few hours on the weekend, so...
Yeah, that's the only time I can play games I actually want to play for fun for myself. It's like an hour a night.
Yeah. So yeah, there's that. Maximilius 101 with a $10 donation. What do you suppose your ZP selves on the overlay are doing right now? I like to imagine Marty is singing random documents and audio logs, and Yahtzee is desperately trying to get him to stop. I think on the art, I'm being killed by the Lord of Cinder.
I think that he's talking about the stream overlay.
That one.
I think in the stream overlay, Marty is peeping on me, trying to have an illicit piss in some long grass.
Hmm. You should be turned around then. You shouldn't be facing me.
Well, maybe I didn't expect you to suddenly emerge from the top of the building.
I'm like the sicko. I'm the sicko image.
Like I'm pissing on the wall of a shed or something. And the shed with your face on it. And then you just popped up over the roof of the shed saying, "Hello, are you pissing on my face?" And I'm like, I can't go when you're watching.
Don't piss on your friend's face. That's weird. Right? Well, I'm not making shame. You can piss wherever you want.
One could argue that one only pisses on the very bestest of friends' faces.
That is, true. That is the truest sign of friendship, is if you've pissed on someone. We're going to stop that there. We're not going to go any further there. Matthew Adkins with the $5 dono. We couldn't see your hands during the Hi-Fi Rush stream, so we can't rule out that maybe it was Toffee who was playing and has no rhythm.
If that's what you want to believe, then go ahead.
Yeah. Do you think there's ever going to be games for dogs? Do you think Toffee's ever going to be able to enjoy a video game?
There's games for cats, isn't there? You can buy those things for your tablet that's just like a mouse moving across a screen and your cat just bats at it. Occupies them for hours.
Incredible. I feel like that's a million-dollar idea, is like Cat Critic. Like, what do cats think again? There's got to be some channel that's like, I sat my cat in front of all the Oscar nominees. This is the one he sat the longest before getting bored and wandering off.
Cat reaction videos. Yeah, no doubt.
Oh no, we're back to reaction videos. Ape of Naples with a $2 donut. Jim Sterling's take on this gave me brain damage.
Okay, I don't think I've seen his take.
No. Agent Moon.
I can take over from here. This is where I come in. Agent Moon, member for 7 months in Early Access. Critics are not one size fits all, which was the point I was making earlier. You really should explore a smorgasbord of critics and find with the ones you generally agree with rather than get angry at someone having a negative opinion of a game you liked.
I like critics I disagree with, though. I like reading like genuinely great scathing criticism of a game I really like and seeing
well
it
a lot of people don't appreciate that nuance of as you say, most people are just looking for validation.
Yeah, and I don't fucking need that.
These people don't really engage with, as I say, the larger cultural sphere. Anyway, a superb boner gives $10 and says, the most important thing I look for in a critic is consistency. The vast rotation of critics at IGN makes each review's viewpoint feel inconsistent with the others, whereas ZP has a consistent voice.
That's because Yahtzee's one person.
You know, the funny thing is that I always thought print video game journalism had much less of the sort of facelessness problem that corporate online game journalism has.
There was also so fewer people doing it.
Yeah, like the old like video game magazines I used to read would have like a team of like six or seven guys, and there'd be like profiles at the start of the magazine, and there'd be pictures of them, and you'd get to know them a bit, and their reviews would always be infused with like a bit of, you know, a bit of humor and a bit of like personal experience, and you got appreciated them as human beings.
Yeah, which I think it's easy if you don't consume IGN's content to say it's a faceless critic, but like almost all those critics are on weekly podcasts and video shows and stuff that more people watch than our streams and video shows. So like they do have an audience who knows them as people, but the reach of their things are far more vast. So when you see, you know, their reviews get 1 million, 2 million views on YouTube, it's not like Zero Punctuation, where I'm assuming a majority of the people who watch your videos have watched other ones of your videos.
Well, like, I get new viewers in all the time, but I think what I benefit from is that I'm in character when I do a Zero Punctuation review. And that character is consistent. He's a slightly psychotic person who's trapped in a yellow room.
Oh no, is it because someone pissed on the side of it?
And he's got a sort of weird fetish for sea mammals.
Yeah.
But yeah, when I'm writing Zero Punctuation, I'm in character as a sort of like overblown, sort of what the Mr. Plinger thing was doing. You sort of take the stereotype of the nerdy internet critic that was started with shit like Angry Video Game Nerd, Nostalgia Critic, take the sort of undertext and the sort of pathetic undercurrent of these people and sort of play that up as a character.
Is it worrisome to you as a creator that there is a non-zero amount of people out there who don't realize that it's a character?
Well, or is that just on them? Would surprise me, because they're fucking cartoons. They are fucking cartoons. I don't think anyone seriously believes I'm a black and white icon individual who looks like he belongs on a road sign.
You'd be surprised. I think you'd be surprised.
Anyway, Will Cooling gives £2 and says, try Hi-Fi Rush on easy. I've no rhythm and can play it. Well, I think Hi-Fi Rush is one of those games where you feel a hell of a lot more satisfied if you can play it on a higher difficulty and do really well.
Yeah.
You're like, fuck, yeah, I'm really getting into the music.
Yes. You get in that hot, hot flow state.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say hot, hot flow state anymore. That was a one-off.
I got my wife into a hot, hot flow state the other night.
Son of a bitch.
Poseidon Energy gives $10 and says, I like to play games on lower difficulties mainly because I want to have fun with the game as stress relief. I will not feel any urge to come back to a game if every time I pick it up I get angry. I'm sort of with you, Poseidon Energy, but that's the sort of thing I do when I want to listen to a podcast at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I just want a game that's just a thing I can do with my hands while I listen to something.
Yeah. I'm not a very competitive person. Like, I don't...
No, because what we haven't covered in this entire argument is the multiplayer experience.
Yeah.
I mean,
which is like specifically a very hard thing to talk about for anyone. Yeah, like, who do you want to hear multiplayer criticism from?
Even more so than single-player games, multiplayer you have to play a lot of to get good at. And the average person will go into a multiplayer mode and then just get flattened by the people who've got the time to play it 24 hours a day.
Yeah. Yeah, you always hear... I even have friends who were like, I can't... Like, they were very casual players. And they were like, I can't play Warzone anymore because I want to play, like, once a month. And I go in and I just get fucking obliterated immediately. And I'm like, well, this isn't fun.
This is one of the many reasons why multiplayer will never replace single player, no matter how much the publishers want it to.
Yeah.
Anyway. Doran Grossman Naples gives $5 and says, I want all my game reviews to be done by AI trained on the Oxford English Dictionary. No bias, unless you count opinions on linguistics. Ah, damn it. Oh, that brings back the old stupid argument over whether video game critics should be objective.
Just get a fact sheet from the publisher, then. Just tell me how many levels the game is, how many graphics it is, and how much it costs, and there you go. Objective review.
Yeah, I think Stephanie Sterling did like a fully objective review as a gag once.
Yeah.
And it was basically this is a game. This is a game. Yeah. You control things with buttons.
It's not a product. It's not a refrigerator. It's not a coffee maker. Like, it's art. If we want games to be art, then you got to understand that every art critic brings their own history and bias into things.
Okay, this is a mysterious one. We've got no name, member for 11 months in early access, and message retracted. That's all it says.
What if it was how you die?
Make sure that what you will.
The date and time of how you die.
Well, it's a shame I missed it.
Yeah.
Man of...
I don't have it. It's weird. I've been keeping track of all of them, and I don't even have it.
Manav Sridharan, God knows how you pronounce that, apologies in advance, gives 100 rupees and says, Yats, what's your opinion on Sandy Toksvig on QI? Have you checked the show out since Stephen Fry's exit? I personally think she's quite good. That was like, wasn't that like 15 years ago that Sandy Toksvig took over from Stephen Fry on QI?
Maybe Manav sent this message 15 years ago and it just took a while to get here.
I haven't watched it the longest time, but... you know, I like Stephen Fry in a way I don't like Sandy Toksvig so much, so obviously I preferred it when Stephen Fry was there.
What's Sandy's deal? I know who Stephen Fry is, I don't know who Sandy is.
Oh, she's like a, you know, a UK presenter of stuff who's showed up on like pretty much every panel show.
Gotcha.
And, you know, it's not that I dislike her as a person, it's just Stephen Fry is such a wonderful person to listen to with his big favourite uncle sweater and his big chummy face. And obviously, it was a step down to have anyone else in that role.
Sure, I imagine that's a lot of people have been going through that the last few years with Jeopardy here in the States, with Alex Trebek passing away and being replaced by a couple folks.
Rubikson gives $10 and says, "Please bring back silent protagonists. I can't stand my main characters endlessly talking and trying to sound cool or funny. Love you, Yats." Well. You might love me less if you'd watch my latest extra punctuation, which goes out publicly this week, I believe.
Mm-hmm. I feel like silent pro tags are a product of a bygone era.
Well, that's very much the subject of my extra punctuation.
Mm-hmm.
Because I tend to agree.
Yep.
This was brought on by...
Half-Life is very weird without Gordon talking.
I know, like,
Is he supposed to... Do we assume... He's supposed to be talking, and we don't hear him, or do we assume he just never says anything?
You're basically just reading aloud the transcript of my extra punctuation video at this point.
Yeah, but like, what are we supposed to assume?
I know. It's in retrospect, it does come across as weird. It's part of the reason why it doesn't bother me that Isaac Clarke is a voice in the Dead Space remake.
That's right. How about the guy in Atomic Heart?
Well, I wish he was silent. Yeah, I agree with Nick on that one.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway, Zaratha gives $5 and says, "What did you call me, Marty? Sweet? Screw you, you sweet boy. Yahtzee's sweetness to be determined, though." I can be sweet. I mean, you should see me with my daughters.
I'm sure you're very sweet.
Yes, I'm very sweet when I'm not yelling at them to eat their oatmeal. Before I smash it in their face.
What if they want to play remakes, though? What if they're excited for the Silent Hill 2? What if they like Silent Hill 2 remake better than the original?
Out the door. Tommy Salty gives 10 PLNs and say, Marty funds Nintendo, not the other way around.
Nintendo, man, I need Nintendo to start sending me codes because it is getting bad. I'm spending so much money in these fucking games. This is unsalvageable.
I got a free Switch from Nintendo for review?
Son of a bitch. I got a free Wii U from Nintendo.
Oh, well, we know who they love most then, don't we? Yeah. Andrew S. gives $2 and says, Righteous Marty is a treat.
Delicious. That's all. I just said delicious.
Okay. Yoda7104 gives $5 and says, is Marty being angrily, purposefully ignorant of the idea of power structures because he is American or because he has felt the pressures at IGN?
Ooh. Ooh. I don't work at IGN anymore. If there was like an exciting tell-all, don't you think that me or the hundreds of people who left that job, someone would have said what it was like there? Like, I have no reason to lie at this point, unless I was paid off so heavily.
But what about the Jeff Gerspin at PC at GameSpot debacle?
That's great. So that's an example from 15 years ago. What about an example since then?
Was it that long ago? I guess it would have been.
Wasn't Kane and Lynch like a 360 game?
Yeah, but 360 had a pretty long shelf life.
When did Kane and Lynch come out? Kane and Lynch, 2007, 15 years ago. Well, November. There you go.
Exactly 15 years. It didn't feel like that long ago. Mm-hmm. Oh, God, we're old. Anyway. Oh, look, it's the other Frost, who gave us $5 for some reason.
Frost, you can just like DM me a question, just like Slack me a question, and we'll read it out.
You could probably expense that, Frost. Yeah. Who says, shouldn't the question be, should critics be good at making games? The best food critics are cooks, not eaters. Blah, foodies. Well, on the other hand, Frost, people who, when you like try to criticize something, then turn around and say, have you ever made a such and such? Are absolute shitheads.
Yeah. I mean, like, think about like sports journalists and sports critics. Like, are they expected to like set world records and kick game winning field goals and fucking nail 3-pointers?
Although obviously I agree that being a game designer does give you an extra insight from an analytical perspective. But I'd say that the player's perspective is equally valid.
I would say, yeah. And I would also say that like if someone spent a week working in a AAA development studio, like they would have so many of their preconceptions shattered. I think maybe it would just create more kind of understanding and empathetic critics. Not like you need to go
but in a way, doesn't that give you a certain bias? Doesn't that lead to the situation where we were complaining about earlier, where publishers and the video game mainstream media are too in with each other?
No, if you just understand how the sauce is made, isn't that a good thing? Isn't that literally what you were talking about? Of having an understanding of how something works?
Well, it's a nuanced issue, and a bit of everything is good. The truth lies somewhere in the middle, I'm sure.
Delicious. Appetizer sampler platters for everyone tonight.
Anyway, Lani Soulfire gives $5 and says, Yahtzee was right. The RE4 remake gameplay demo and trailers make it look like it's lost its campiness, which is part of the charm of OG RE4. That's definitely the impression I've been getting too, Lani Soulfire.
I will say the only reason I'm withholding judgment is because the sections they are showing are specifically non-campy sections, like sections that are not campy in the original game. So like going up to the church where Ashley's kidnapped, sort of that whole like going up to that graveyard. Also, there's too much rain in this game. In all this footage they're showing, there's too much rain and the raindrops are too long. We need shorter raindrops. The raindrops are too long. It's insane.
Well, that whole bit in the original game where you're going to rescue Ashley was taking place in the pouring rain, as I recall.
Yeah, but those raindrops weren't as long. Like, someone who's watched, if anyone in chat has watched this footage, tell me if I'm insane. The rain is too long.
Did you know?
I don't know what that means, but the rain's too long.
Did you know that in the movies, when they make a rainy scene, rain doesn't really show up on camera if it's just rain by itself? So what they usually do is they'll add a little bit of like colorant, usually something like milk, to the water before they spray it over the scene so it shows up on camera. Fun fact there.
Look at that. Maybe that's what they did here.
Every time I see a game it's visibly raining, I think, oh, I'm getting drenched in milk.
Yeah.
I didn't plan for this when I got out of the car.
Oh no, our lead was lactose intolerant.
Mirful Diwot, member for 2 months in Early Access, says, enjoying the stream. Well,
thank
glad
you so
to
much,
hear it, Mirful Diwot.
Thank
we
you.
We will enjoy your member money.
We do.
Orange Kitty gives $50 Canadian, deep red.
Incredible.
Super chat, no less, to say, I don't think you need to be a skilled player. One of my favorite critics is self-proclaimed terrible at games, yet he still has some of the most insightful critics of games of all times. Shout out to Noah Caldwell Gervais on YouTube, who you brought up earlier.
I did. 7.5 hour video on,
I mean, at that point,
on the Resident Evil franchise.
At that point, you might as well write a book, because that's what you've basically done for a
it's
script
wonderful.
For a 7 hour video where you're constantly talking.
I've been watching a little bit of it, a little bit of it every time. He also started with Resident Evil Zero because he wanted to play them canonically. And he's like, I recommend people do not start with Resident Evil Zero. This was a very bad place
no,
to start.
No.
Yeah.
It's like starting playing the Half-Life games by playing Black Mesa. That would have been a very
all
damn
right.
thing to do.
All right. Did we tell you how we think the game is haunted? Because the game suddenly became widescreen. So the game was in 4x3, our first two streams, and then for this last stream, the game is suddenly widescreen.
Did KZ change the settings?
He rebound some of the keys so it's easy for him to crouch jump. And then suddenly the game was widescreen, and then he appeared in a box, and he couldn't get out of the box. So we think the game is haunted. Hmm. That's our theory.
Well, it was a pretty janky engine at the time.
This is true. Was that the first Source game?
No, it was based off the Quake engine. The original Quake engine, no less.
I didn't know that.
It was called the Gold Source engine, but it was based on the original Quake. As quite a lot of engines are. There are games engines to this day that still contain code from the original Quake.
It is crazy.
Yeah.
That is like nuts to me that someone wrote code almost 30 years ago and it's some of that DNA is still in games. That's very cool.
Tazgar, member for 9 months in Early Access, says, is a pro player always a good critic? Well, that was my earlier point, Tazgar. I think it is possible to be too in. I think we're at your point where you're saying, oh, you have marginally changed the GUIs from how I remembered it from the previous update. You've ruined everything. Now
the
you've
GUIs.
Completely thrown off my muscle memory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think of consuming things from pros as like an entirely different thing than criticism. Like I love games done quick runs. I love watching speed runs of games because it makes me look at games I thought I knew well in an entirely different light. And the same thing, like, I don't know, there's a big, so they announced that there's a Street Fighter VI tournament coming up with $1 million prize pool. You want to read a review from someone who I generally don't know, like from someone who competes in that tournament? Do you want to read a review from someone who's like, pretty casual fighting fan like KC or someone who doesn't know shit like the two of us?
I find it really hard to watch competitive pro gaming stuff because everything's just way too in. It's full of terminology I don't get.
I think that's, again, part of the reason why I know both of us really liked Neon White is because it feels like it's almost like a gateway. Like it is a way to understand some of the thought process behind competitive speedrunning.
Hey, look who's back from his walk.
Is it Toffee?
Yeah, it might well
be. I bet it's Toffee.
Did you have a fun time? Did you do a big poo?
Did you piss on any barns?
Did you piss on any of big pictures of Marty's face?
No, that'd be weird if mine were in East Bay. Get my face out of there.
Anyway. SVSquirrel 2000 gives $5 euros and says, reaction videos are the same thing as someone recommending an anime to someone and then needling them. Did you watch it yet? What did you think? I think people do that with things besides anime, SVSquirrel 2000, but I guess you gave us an unintended insight into your life there.
Yeah, I guess. Is it also the same as Yahtzee? You get recommended things ever so often.
Oh, do I? I hadn't noticed.
Coming this summer, members on Patreon can choose what game Yahtzee has to review during a slow season.
Oh, God. Just make me review my dog. 8 out of 10. I like his cuddles, but he does stink. I'm not even going to try to pronounce that.
Mateusz Świtosławski.
That's probably wrong, but fine. Gives 25 PLNs and says, there is a need for critics that review games outside of their comfort. is this game beginner friendly, but not according to a veteran, but genre noob? As mm-hmm. I say, a range of opinions, probably for the best.
I also, I've said this before on streams, but I really appreciate someone like Nick. Every year feels like he gets outside of his comfort zone a little bit. Try something new.
I wonder if
he taught himself to like Souls-likes. He taught himself to enjoy these like isometric RPGs. He's trying to get into roguelikes.
I feel like being like a lifelong vet of video games mm-hmm. in the traditional sense sort of puts me at a disadvantage when it comes to reviewing really avant-garde shit like your Sam Barlow FMV games, which, you know, people who are entirely new to gaming probably have a completely different experience with because they got no preset biases in that area.
Yeah, it's almost like they're going in a blank slate.
A tabula rasa.
That was the name of the third episode of Lost.
It was also a shitty game by Richard Gaines.
Oh yeah, that's right, forgot about that game. Also, big update, Tommy Salty, renowned Polish, said good job Marty on the pronunciation.
Nice,
just want to say.
BS Marsh gives $5 and says, I consider the fact that I beat Elden Ring at my age a minor miracle. My lack of immediate skill is not an indictment of the game.
There you go.
Fair enough.
Proud of you, Beast Marsh.
Kiro Osex the 13th in gives $10 and says, more pleasing words. Do you want to tackle these or shall I? Soliloquy.
I don't know some of these words.
Soliloquy, alveolar, inspissate, endocrine, ophthalmological, poetaster. I don't think I know that
I
last one.
I literally only know soliloquy.
I don't think I know that last one. Someone who eats poets?
Oh,
someone who
no.
eats poets and criticizes them for a magazine or something.
Oh,
and now
no.
here's the insights from our resident poet taster. Hot Creamy Fart gives $20. Delicious. And says, there's no grand conspiracy. What makes IGN look bad is giving Madden nothing less than an 8 for a decade until 2021. And by then, they had fully endorsed every participle of the most scientifically abusive monetization scheme. Okay.
I did the jerk-off motion.
Okay, fine.
Put it there. It was they get someone who is a hardcore Madden fan to... I don't know what to tell you. They get someone who really likes Madden to review Madden because that's what Madden fans want to hear.
That would be... as someone who is completely not engaged with the rest of the sphere of gaming, I assume.
But you know who that represents? 90% of the people who buy Madden.
Yes. Well, that's it, isn't it? Kurt Horsting gives $10 and says, for me, watching reviews of 1v1 fighting games by people who don't have any idea how they work is as useful as getting a guitar review by someone who doesn't know how to play a chord. Okay.
Yeah. But you could also, that review of that fighting game could be a gateway for people who are like, hey, I don't know anything about fighting games.
Yeah,
could I get enjoyment out of it?
Maybe it's not for you. Because fighting games, along with RTSs, I think, are one of the genres that I think have been completely taken over by the sweaties.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone who plays those games dreams of being a pro in the competitive scene. No one just has them games for fun anymore. Captain Loin gives $10 and says, unfortunately, the game review system feels broken. Tight review schedules and the forbidden numbers on review scores really seem to have gutted the actual idea of in-depth critique among many. I guess that's why a lot of people go to YouTube for those hour-long Noah Caldwell Gervais essays.
Yeah.
I know I certainly do when I'm looking for something with some actual deep insight.
Yep. Because again, think of like the IGN critic is for the person, the layman who is just Googling blank game, then wants to see a score.
Yes, they're aiming at the moron in a hurry, as discussed in earlier streams. Daniel TH gives $5 and says, this message has been brought to you by Machinima. Oh, Machinima, that old site.
Was that an escapist thing?
Hmm?
I know very little about Machinima. Was that an escapist thing? Or was the escapist thing under Machinima?
Machinima.com was like a aggregate site for Machinima videos. And they were very shitty to their creators.
Oh, that's not
apparently.
Good. Was that what that like? Was that Red vs. Blue? Was that something else?
No, that was Rooster Teeth.
Oh, turns
Machinima
out I don't know shit about
any was
of this.
A few things. I think Freeman's Mind was on Machinima at first, and they had a big falling out.
Is that that game? Is that that terrible game that Casey and I are supposed to play?
Oh, shut up! Oh,
no,
hey,
isn't that what Freeman's Mind is?
Yeah, well, Freeman's Mind is a video series on the subject of Half-Life.
Oh, wait, what's the really bad Half-Life game that we're supposed to play?
Oh, Hunt Down the Freeman.
Hunt Down the Freeman. Okay, yeah, sorry.
No, Freeman's Mind is a comedy series by Ross Scott, where he goes through all of Half-Life and adds a narration from Gordon Freeman. And it's very funny. You should check it out once you finish the game.
Interesting.
Oh, I noticed we've reached our goal for Nick and Marty play a bunch of Xbox 360 games.
Da, 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 da. Apparently those games are Max Payne 3, Alan Wake, Splinter Cell, Blacklist. Fourth game is up in the air. That's what
can it be Inversion?
I don't even remember what Inversion was.
It was a shitty third-person shooter. Like many shitty third-person shooters that were on the Xbox 360.
That console was lousy with shitty third-person shooters.
Yeah. Cover-based shooters, no less.
Yeah, right?
With lots of brown. Daniel TH gives $5 and says, who are your favorite video game critics? And if you say yourself, I completely understand. Well, I don't even like myself very much, Daniel TH. But I like, just to bring him up again, Ross Scott, who does Freeman's Mind, also does Ross's Game Dungeon, which I've always liked because he takes a sort of airy, broad cultural perspective on, like, old DOS games.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Stephanie Sterling's always good for a laugh.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of, generally the stuff I gravitate towards are YouTube essayists who, again, don't have to. They have more time to kind of think and formulate their opinions. They're not, stuck to the embargo model. And so folks like Jacob Geller, the aforementioned Noel Caldwell-Gervais, Eurothug, Super Eyepatch Wolf, Rasputin.
Yeah, Super Eyepatch Wolf. What was that? Yeah. White Light, I think he's called.
White Light,
I like Tesnakera. He's pretty good.
I don't know what that is. That sounds great, though.
Where are we? Dimitri gives $10. Says, a game's pacing and challenge curve is often considered for the default difficulty. What would be the possible fix to when critics aren't good at games enough to evaluate stroke appreciate that type of pacing? Well, as I say,
that's
maybe critics can only provide the average level of skills perspective.
Yeah. So I'm always interested in, and again, I think as long as folks are honest with, like, what their take on a thing is, then if you know what you're getting into, then I think I'm down to read anything as long as someone is honest about, like, you know, their history or the circumstances they played this thing in or the struggles they had with it. I shouldn't say I'm down to read anything, because I'm very much not down to read anything. But I think anything should be able to exist, as long as people sort of explain why.
Sorry, I was just corresponding there for a second.
Ooh, that's exciting.
Glockamole, member for 21 months in early access, says, nice scarf, Yards. It's not a scarf! People keep thinking it's a scarf. It's a bathrobe with the grey lining. See? It goes all the way down.
I have a cardigan that is a different color on the chest than it is on the arms, and people always call it a vest, and I get very self-conscious when people call it a vest. So I'm like, it is a cardigan, and it's just different colors on the arms. So I know how you feel there.
See, I grew up assuming a vest was what you would think of as a wife beater.
Mm.
And what you think of as a waist, I think of as either a waistcoat or a tank top.
Okay, interesting.
Anyway. Maximilianus101 gives $5. Says, as I get older, I find I'm getting worse at games, especially ones that require Twitch reflexes. Has this happened to anyone else, or am I just broken?
Nope.
I feel like my manual dexterity has reduced as I've gotten older, but, you can always find compensations that work for you. I never used to need a wrist cushion when I was playing mouse and keyboard games, but I do these days.
Yeah, I think there's even, like, so many professional, like, League of Legends players or whatever, they, like, tend to peak at, like, something like 22 or 23, and then your reflexes go down after that, apparently, which is
that's why most professional athletes sort of retire at 25.
Yeah.
Well, depending on the sport, I guess. Captain Loin gives $5 and says, sometimes they do make the book instead. Daniel Johnson did a 750-page critical analysis of Wario Land 4 about a decade ago.
That's too many pages. It's too many pages about Wario Land 4. As someone who loves Wario Land 4, too many pages.
Luke Jimenez, member for 9 months in Early Access, says, early work means I can catch the end of the stream. Good for you, Luke Jimenez.
You did it! I think you may have skipped to...
Did I?
Clover and Anais and Jackson Jewel.
Yes. Clover and Anais, member for 6 months of bonus content, says, Richard, who I know only of Lord British. Also, we've been here for 6 months, like what the F? Yeah, Richard Garriott, or as he likes to be called, Lord British, originally creator of the Ultima games. Though I think in Tabula Rasa, his self-insert character was called General British. Because it wasn't a fantasy setting.
That's way different. You can still be a lord in space, right?
Apparently he's space, kind of a nutter, lord. Richard Garriott. Because he's really rich and a bit of an auteur. And I heard a story, I have not verified the truth of this, but apparently he once held a Titanic-themed party where he got everyone on a ship in the middle of a lake and then he actually sank it and everyone had to swim to shore.
To be honest, at a certain point, people should no longer be able to get any more money. You've reached the top of money, then you no more money for you.
As I said, I don't know how true that is. That's just the story I've heard.
Yeah.
Jackson Jewell gives $5 and says, the question is also, do you have to be a good writer to review books? The Last of Us was a good story pasted over solid but unremarkable gameplay. Well, most people who review books write criticism in essay form. So I'd say, yes, you have to be a good writer to review books.
Yeah, I mean, I would say a book critic is the closest, has the closest set of skills to the thing they are reviewing.
Yeah, because it's
in anything.
Because what else are you doing when you're critiquing if not writing?
Yeah. I mean, that doesn't mean you're good at spinning up a story or characterization or anything.
Well,
like
that's
that,
but, quite. That's a different thing.
You have the, at the very least, you have the tool set.
BE gives $5 and says, how many critics could a good critic critique good if good critic could critique critiques good?
I'm going to throw up.
I think they're just having a little fun.
I'm going to throw up. That's too many tongue twisters.
Cornish Cream T07 gives £2 and says, Matthew Matosis is a game essayist worth watching. If you say so, Cornish Cream T.
I love Matthew Matosis.
And Esfius Guru 2000 gives €5 and says, what do professional athletes do after they retire? Do they get a real job or do they live off their riches they made playing the sports ball? My understanding is that the usual career path is sponsorships and product endorsement and being a commentator on the sport.
Yeah. However, there are plenty of those are the ones who are like fortunate enough to be sort of top of the line athletes, like household names and
presumably didn't retire with massive brain damage like Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, exactly. Or sort of, spend all their money as soon as they made it and then they're, ostensibly disabled after they're retired. And
I think in British football circles, they mostly just become commentators.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and I think Tom Brady, the football player who retired, signed a contract to be a commentator for Fox for football, and his contract for Fox was bigger than all of the money he made in his career. Endorsements, all that shit.
Well, that's Hollywood for you.
Or they make Space Jams.
Space Jams? Artisanal space jams.
Go down to the farmer's market on the weekend. Get yourself some space jams.
Oh, I like some artisanal space jam. I got some artisanal space marmalade at the Cost Plus World Market the other day.
Some Paddington shit right there. What do you think of Paddington? Have you ever watched Paddington?
I have not watched a great deal of Paddington. Obviously, right. I know of it.
Yeah. The movies are very good, and he likes marmalade.
Well, he was like a series of books and animated things in the UK.
I'm not a nerd though. I just watch the movies.
You don't have to be a nerd to know who Paddington is. You just have to be a British person.
Sounds like a nerd. One and the same.
Okay.
I think you brought up last week, Eldon Duncan? Or
you want to go to Vinnie Jones and tell him all British people are nerds?
No, he's scary. He's the juggernaut. He beat the shit out of me.
Well, quite. I'd watch out my words more carefully.
I would never.
Anyway, I think that's all the Super Chats. So, I will just say thank you very much for watching Slightly Something Else. I was Yahtzee Croshaw, and that over there is Marty Slaver.
Hello. Thank you. Enid Blyton, that was the thing I couldn't remember. Thank you,
oh,
Enid
yes,
Blyton.
That thing.
Did you see... Was that you? Did I see Enid Blyton was, like, trending on Twitter? Couldn't have been because of you.
I very much doubt it was because of me. I just brought it up because it felt like Hogwarts Legacy, all the characters were talking like they were characters in Enid Blyton books.
The thing I didn't like was that I'd never heard those words before, and then I heard them several times in 1 week, and let me tell
it's
you...
It's funny how that happens, isn't it? Like, you hear a new word, and then suddenly it's all over the place.
Yeah. I don't like it. Makes me uncomfortable.
Anyway, what have we got coming up this week?
Later tonight, Casey and Jesse will be back for Hidden Gems playing Wanted Dead.
Ooh.
The controversial...
I played like half an hour of that. I thought it was shit.
A lot of people think it was shit. Not Casey, though. Casey, big fan of it. So yeah, we'll have that. We'll have the regular streams all week. Recap tomorrow. We'll be chatting about Ant-Man. Mm-hmm. What do you got going on ZP later this week?
Well, on Zero Punctuation this week, I will be reviewing the Dead Space remake, so I can put off doing Hogwarts Legacy another week, and put off getting all my windows broken. So obviously I'll be streaming the Dead Space remake in the post-CB stream. Maybe I'll even play New Game Plus, so everyone can see all the fancy new weapons.
Nice.
And I've got an extra punctuation dropping for everyone on YouTube on Thursday, which is on the subject of silent protagonists, funnily enough.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll be doing our usual Sea of Thieves stream on Thursday. Maybe Jack will be back for that. I don't know.
There's really no way of knowing. However, Jack will be back on Friday. New stream that was funded by y'all. Adventure is live. It's going to be a late stream, 5 p.m. Central to 7 p.m. Central.
Ooh.
Where Jack, Amy, Casey, and Jesse are going to get together and play various tabletop RPG video games.
Well, actually, chat. I think this week we're all showing up for a chat stream about the last season of Adventure is Nigh. Like we did after the first season. So
incredible.
This week, Adventure is Live will be one of those again. We're all going to get together and answer your questions on season 2 of Adventure is Nigh.
Incredible. Tommy says, why do you hate Europe? It's because we have an Australian in the midst. blame Amy for hating Europe.
I lived in Australia for like 13 years. I think of Australia as more the place I come from than I think of Britain at this point.
Oh, no, I meant just time zone wise. I think Tommy said, why do you hate Europe? As in because it's very late for Europe. And I said, because it has to work for Amy.
Okay.
Yeah, that'll be great. So if you have questions for Adventure is Nigh, tune into that on Friday evening and get those in.
There you go. And
excellent.
I guess that'll be it from us.
Heck yeah.
So, bye!
Bye, everybody.
Toffee's over there somewhere. Say bye, Toffee. Toffee says bye.